be focusing on the sort of the thick of it and the data that we have at the moment and what we're currently thinking about, what we're finding, and hopefully get people thinking about how it is that we can effectively do health promotion for the increasing number of long-term cancer survivors that we have, thank goodness. So I'd just like to start with a quote from Hawkins and et al. In 2010 from the Journal of Cancer Survivorship that I really is very sort of influential for me in thinking about why it is that we're focusing on health promotion and thinking about when and how to do that most effectively. So Hawkins et al. Stated, "The life-threatening nature of a cancer diagnosis and the rigors of treatment can serve as a catalyst for life change." And really in this program of study that we're engaging in, that's really what we're seeking to explore, is whether this can be a catalyst for life change, and if so, how, and how do we help people make changes that are important not only for their cancer diagnosis, for their cancer history, and but also for the other comorbidities that they're facing. So I have no conflicts of interest to declare. The work that we're doing here is funded through the National Cancer Institute and the Office of Behavioral and Social Science Research at the NIH, and its focus is broadly on breast cancer, prostate cancer, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma survivorship. Today I will be presenting in relation to the cancer survivor's perspectives just our findings related to breast cancer, because that's where we are right now. So as I said, from this slide, really, the takeaway points are really just that the good news is that we have a growing population of cancer survivors, and that's wonderful. The challenge is that they face elevated health risks, and we need to figure out how to make sure that people can live long and healthy and productive lives. And lifestyle behavior and getting health promotion can be and needs to be an important part of that. And so we're thinking about and trying to design, think about designing an intervention that does this and is mindful of not only the life experience and the holistic perspective of cancer survivors, but also the clinical realities. So thinking about when this might be feasible, who is engaged, and thinking about that in a very sort of systems perspective. So this study initiative is a two-phase mixed method study. The first phase was with 32 members of cancer care teams, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. The second phase was with 52, collected an array of different data from 52 long-term, and that means 2 years or more post-diagnosis, long-term survivors of breast and prostate cancer and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. We did three 24-hour dietary recalls with each of the cancer survivors using the NCI ASA24. We collected structured demographic and health data from each of the cancer survivors. And we also conducted two qualitative interviews, one at the beginning of our study, and the second where we provided feedback to people about their dietary data and talked about diet specifically at the end of data collection. And I'm going to be presenting a little bit of data from the first phase as well as the second phase. What the goal of this study really has been to do is to take a holistic perspective, and today I'll be focusing on how clinicians, what we're learning about how clinicians view diet during survivorship, how cancer fits into survivors' self-concept, and also how do women, and this is focusing on breast cancer, how do the women with a history of breast cancer discuss their diet in relation to their cancer, as well as in relation to their overall health and sort of ongoing life more generally. So first, to start with just some broad findings from the clinicians, we conducted, as I said, 32 semi-structured qualitative interviews. We had 10 oncologists, 5 surgeons, 6 primary care providers, 7 nurses, and 2 social workers and a patient navigator. So we really tried to bring in the whole cancer care team and take a sort of from a clinical perspective, a holistic tack to this. I will be focusing on 3 of the sort of clearly emergent themes. There's much more that we can do here, but the things that came out very strongly for us were as follows. There were divergent clinical views on the nature of the evidence of diet in relation to recurrence, as well as quality of life and health overall. So some people felt that, some clinicians felt that there was very strong evidence and felt that that was something that they were felt comfortable conveying to their patients and prioritized, whereas others felt that the evidence base was very weak and didn't volunteer information to their patients and really sort of stood back from the idea that this was something that they felt comfortable doing until the evidence base was more developed. And part of this is probably to do with the fact that we're looking at three different cancers, and so this is something that, but there was a divergence of opinion here. Where there was less divergence of opinion was that if there was something to be done about this, that there were sufficient resources to do so. So the clinicians, they sort of all talked about, although there were differences in opinion about how appropriate discussing diet was, that they all felt that they're really, they didn't feel ready at the moment to do so within the current system. Some focused on a lack of time, talked about all of the other things that were necessary to get through in a clinical visit. Others talked about a lack of expertise on their own part in terms of knowing what to say, how to actually bring about effective dietary change. So resources was something that came out very strongly in the clinical interviews. There was also a difference of opinion in relation to when these interventions, if we were to intervene and seek to improve people's diet, when that should be appropriately done. So some people felt, as is in this first quote, that really the right time was as soon as diagnosis occurred, that this was something that was important to treatment efficacy, and that this is something that should be started as early as possible. Other people felt fairly strongly that treatment was not the time to be making major changes in relation to diet, and that as treatment was ending, that was a more appropriate time to take this on. So again, food for thought as we move forward and thinking about timing of these of such interventions. So now to move to what we're learning from the survivors. Again, here I'm focusing just on our breast cancer survivors. So there's a small, it's a small sample of 25 women who are from 2 to 24 years post-diagnosis. We had 9 of the women who are meeting our high level of physical activity criteria of 5 or more active days per week. We only had 1 current smoker in our sample. 14 of the women reported having drunk alcohol within the last month. About half of them were currently working, about half are married, about half are white, and we do recognize that we have a sample that's more highly educated. We had 18 women who are at least reported having 4-year college or more, so highly educated population, and few with low levels of income. So we have a pretty affluent and educated population here. Having said that, we also, when we look at comorbidities, we see that the sample sort of represents what we would expect, that just under half of the women are also have arthritis, about 40% of the women have hypertension, a third report to, either current or past prior depression, and so on. So these are women that are facing other comorbidities as well. So the first thing that I want to spend a little bit of time on is what we learned when we asked women to describe themselves, answer the question, who am I? That's how we started our first qualitative interview, was to give them a sheet of paper with 10 lines before we talk about cancer or anything else, and ask them to talk about who am I. And this is a word cloud. It's not necessarily scientific. It's illustrative. But to show you how the women sort of thought about themselves. And what we did here was to combine what the women, how the women describe themselves, and to prioritize and give heavier weight to the things that the women said about themselves first. So you see that, and so the larger things and the things that are in the center of this word cloud are the things that came up for multiple women and that were prioritized by those women in the word cloud in this activity early on. So, may I borrow your palm? Thank you. So you see that cancer survivor is here. But it's not the largest thing, that actually these women saw themselves in relational terms, they saw them in career terms, they saw themselves in relation to what they love to do more than, or at least as importantly, as their cancer history. And cancer came up very few times other than in relation to cancer survivors. Cancer warrior was another term that's in there somewhere. Only 6 out of the 25 women talked about cancer at all in this 10. And this was in the context that they knew they were here to talk about cancer. And just 6 of them, and none of them actually talked about it first. So so we think that this is really important and sort of and informative as we go forward and think about making interventions that meet women where they are, that recognize the importance of cancer, but don't assume that these women are dominated by their cancer history and experience. In a summary statistic from our dietary data, we see that in these categories and recommendations are from the 2010 U.S. dietary guidelines, so they include things that are pertinent to cancer, but they're not all related specifically to cancer. These are in relation to healthy diet overall. And we see that actually the women as a whole and as a group are doing relatively well. About half of them are meeting the caloric recommendations. Almost all of them, even though most the majority of these women are drinkers, most of them are actually not drinking outside of the guidelines or reporting that. Most of them are meeting their fruits and vegetables, but there are also clearly areas of improvement in relation to sodium, calcium, and so on, when we think not only about cancer and cancer recurrence, but thinking about comorbidities and healthy diet more broadly. So the last group of data that I'd like to focus on is what we learned when we talked to, when we provided women with feedback about their diet and talked to them about how they understood their diet and how they thought about it in relation to their cancer and their health more generally and then broadly in relation to their sort of overall life experiences. And I wanted to just focus on four emergent themes that we think are important and that we're going to be working more on over the coming year. The first thing was that women talked about their cancer experience having raised consciousness about diet for them. So just to read you a little bit of this first quote, one woman said, before cancer, I never read labels that much. I wasn't interested in what was in the food or whatever. Now I'm very cautious about what I buy, what I eat in the food, and what I eat and what I can't eat. Another woman says that she sort of eats by the numbers now. So did I get my veggies in? Did I get my protein in? So she talks about being mindful in a way that she wasn't before. And this is something that we heard perhaps in other interviews as well when we talked to women about how their cancer history and how their cancer experience may have shaped how they eat now. We also didn't ask women directly about whether they blamed their cancer or whether they saw their, whether they associated their diet with their cancer. We didn't. That wasn't something that we asked about directly. But when we talked about diet in the context of cancer, one of the things that we note is that women engage in a process of sense-making and that they start to talk to us and they talk about how they're thinking about their diet as it may pertain to their cancer diagnosis. So one woman said, I think just about everything you do in some ways, food and otherwise, has an impact on cancer. Another says, what went wrong with me? I don't know. Seriously, I really don't know because I didn't eat badly before. But, and then she's talking about her connection between diet and cancer. Reading and what I know, I definitely think so. I definitely think there's a link between diet and cancer. And then again, this third quote comes from a woman who makes an association between diet and cancer, but also brings in a sort of a sense of luck and a sense of that this is just going to happen to you. So both integrating a sense that how you behave is related to your risk for cancer, but also that it's also an element of luck. And then in this fourth quote, this was really the outlier from these interviews. For one of the women, the idea that there may be a link between diet and cancer was something that seemed to be occurring to her for the first time in the interview. So she talks about, I don't really think food does cause cancer, and then she asks the question, does it? When we talked about what do these women think about, how do they understand how they conceptualize healthy diet, they talked about things that they would add to their diet, things or ways of either items or ways of food preparation that they would avoid, and they also brought in the sense of moderation, so talking about healthy diet as being a diet of moderation here. And so you see here the first quote relates to adding vegetables of a particular color. The next quote talks about staying away from grilling, so a mechanism of food preparation. The third quote talks about cutting down on a particular type of food, and that food is soy. And then the fourth one is illustrative of this idea of moderation. So the idea of what is a healthy diet was not monolithic. It wasn't simple for these women that had the complexity that we know that we all know is so challenging about thinking about healthy diet and making meaningful changes. And so finally, the final theme that I'd like to just spend a little bit of time on is that when we talk to women about diet in relation to their cancer and following their cancer diagnosis, they really put this diet into some into context, and they put that into context in relation to a trajectory in relation to their cancer history, as well as into context of their health more broadly. So in this first quote, a woman talks about how her focus on diet has shifted as she's gone from being in treatment and immediately following treatment to being now several years out from treatment. So she says, you know, when I was in chemo, I did have a year of changing my diet so I can have enough energy, but I slid off the wagon. In these following two quotes, which were from two different women, they sort of put their focus on cancer in relation to their dietary, their thoughts about dietary control and dietary modification in the context of other chronic conditions. So this one woman says, I still eat a lot of salmon because I thought my risk was greater for heart disease than for cancer. And then this final point here says, I don't think that it was cancer that changed my diet. Well, it should have, I guess, but it was really the high blood pressure. So cancer is just one of the things that for lots of these women that they're balancing. So a few concluding points then. What are we sort of grappling with and what are we thinking about in relation to what we learn from the clinician? Really there will be some challenge if we think about health promotion and lifestyle changes for cancer survivors. There are some both structural and attitudinal challenges that we need to be mindful of from the clinical context. And then in relation to what we learn from the women, we see very clearly that cancer is one lens, but it's only one lens through which they view their lives. And we need to think about how cancer can, the title of this talk was A Teachable Moment. Cancer may be a teachable moment, but it can't be just a sort of, it can't be a hammer that we keep hitting. We need to be thinking about all the other things that are going on for these women. We need to be thinking about cancer, about diet within a life, within the life course context, as well as within a survivorship that moves further and further away from, from acute treatment. So again, I'd just like to acknowledge the funders, also my co-investigators, two of whom, Dr. Ann Clausen and our doctoral student who's done most of the hard work here, Keisha Koa, who are here, and also obviously to our study participants, both the cancer survivors and also the members of their the team who worked so hard to care for them. So thank you very much.